From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, what happens when you die? And in a moment, the science of channeling. Here's what's happening. At least 43 people have been reported dead after the historic rains linked to Hurricane Ida flooded the northeastern states on Wednesday night and Thursday morning. At least 13 people were confirmed dead in New York City alone, including a 2-year-old boy, a 48-year-old female, 50-year-old man, who were all found inside of a home in the Jamaica neighborhood of Queens as a result of the severe weather. What a storm. White House Chief Medical Advisor Dr. Anthony Fauci says that he would not be surprised if the recommended full regimen for the Pfizer and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines in the United States becomes 3 doses instead of 2. Christian Wild from MyHeartBook.com is with us for his weekly report on COVID-19. Christian, what do you have for us this week?
You know, it's an interesting week, of course, for everything, for the fires, for the floods, for COVID-19. It's not going away. According to MD Lily Thompson, COVID expert and researcher who reminded all of us online this year that the pandemic, in spite of all the progress that's been made, and there has been some, it's far from being over.
Yeah.
Yeah, we keep getting surprises like the Delta variant, Lambda, and a couple of newer variants that are being studied in the pipeline right now. There's always a surprise for us. Impressively, Thomas reminded us of the ongoing search for new, stronger, safe, natural therapies like turmeric curcumin, which he is a big fan of, or other variations that are coming along, perhaps used as co-therapy with your doctor's permission. Delta and other emerging variants continue to rise, and the more contagious and aggressive the Delta is, these infections and hospitalizations across the globe are mounting every day. Now, a new study, George, in biomedicine and pharmacology reviews a natural alkaloid derived from turmeric and nanosystems to treat COVID-19.
Fantastic.
This is getting a lot of international news.
And it'll get some study too, Christian. Thank you so much. Christian's website, myheartbook.com. President Joe Biden's latest approval rating hit a new low for just 43% amid the chaotic withdrawal of the U.S. personnel from Afghanistan, according to a new NPR poll. That figure is a 6% drop already from a July poll conducted by NPR, which was previously the lowest approval rating President Biden has received since taking office. China's armed forces can paralyze Taiwan's defenses and are able to fully monitor its deployments, the island's defense ministry is saying, offering a stark assessment of the rising threat posed by its giant neighbor. Beijing is stepping up military activities around the island, which it views as Chinese territory. It has never renounced the use of force to bring democratic Taiwan under its control. Charles R. Smith, author of the book Deception, with us. Charles, do you think it's just a matter of time China makes its move for Taiwan?
It is possible. Right now is probably not the best moment. I base that on naval deployments. We currently have at least 3 large battle groups in the vicinity, 2 in the Pacific, as well as large battle groups from the United Kingdom. The QE2 is currently in Guam. So not really a good moment to be stepping off. However, we have seen a great increase in, of course, their cyber activity, as well as a increase in the propaganda activity aimed at separating Taiwan from the United States and allies. And that's basically because of Biden's failure in Afghanistan.
I have said over the last year or so that I expect China to do something with Taiwan in the next several years. I'm going to still hold on that, Charles. Let's hope I'm wrong, huh?
I hope you're wrong as well. The key, though, I think, to all of this that people keep forgetting is the Malacca Strait, which is south in the Pacific area. That's where all of China's oil comes in from the Middle East. Right now, the Ronald Reagan battle group is just off of India after doing its withdrawal work in Afghanistan. So it would be very easy for the Reagan and the Iwo Jima to literally shut down all oil traffic going to China. One of the basics I'm sure that you're pretty familiar with is if you've got no fuel, you really don't get to go very far. And 80% of China's oil goes right through that little strait.
It sure does. Charles, thank you so much. Charles R. Smith's website, softwar.net. The global shortage of computer chips is getting worse, forcing automakers to temporarily close factories, including those that build popular pickup trucks. General Motors has announced that it would pause production at 8 of its 15 North American assembly plants during the next 2 weeks, including two that make the company's top-selling Chevrolet Silverado pickup truck. My gosh. Up next, the science of channeling. Helena Huahbe joins us. We're going to talk about why you should trust your intuition and embrace the force that connects us all. Next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Our special guest for the next couple hours, Helena Huahbe, is the Director of Research at the Institute of Noetic Sciences. That was Edgar Mitchell's old organization. An adjunct professor in the Department of Neurology at the Oregon Health and Science University, president of the Parapsychological Association. Dr. Huahbe is clinically trained as a naturopathic physician and research trained with a Master of Clinical Research and two postdoctoral research fellowships as well. She's published on and spoken internationally about her abilities on complementary and alternative medicine, mind-body medicine, extended human capacities, stress, post-traumatic stress disorder, and the relationship to psychology and physiology, health, and healing. Dr. Huahbe is also especially known for her research around the noetic approach to channeling, and that's what we're going to talk about with her latest work called The Science of Channeling. Helena, welcome to the program.
Wonderful to be here with you today. It's an honor to be here.
I'm looking forward to this. And the foreword to your book is done by our dear friend, Dr. Eben Alexander, who had some incredible near-death experiences himself.
That's right. That's right.
How did you get involved in channeling?
I was also always very sensitive as a child and would feel other people's emotions and feel environments around me. And when I was 10 years old, my mother actually brought me to my grandparents' house for a seance, or what they called gatherings. And my mother and her whole family, my grandmother, experienced what they call trance channeling. And they believe that they step aside, if you will, and a discarnate being uses their body to communicate. So at 10 years old, I was exposed to this, and my whole mother's side of the family was into this esoteric, and I was raised with it. So that's how I first learned about channeling. It was always kind of a hidden personal part of my life, however, and I never really talked about it with others or had it come into my work world. So I find myself in a very unique place today, being able to actually study it through research and being able to talk to people about it.
And let's talk about the word channeling. Give us your definition of what channeling is.
So I'm defining channeling as the process of revealing information and energy that's not limited by our conventional notions of time and space. And it can appear receptive or it can appear expressive. So this is different than that trance channeling word that I used. And this definition is a very broad umbrella term that encompasses a wide variety of experiences that people have, from general intuition, gut hunches, all the way up to mediumship and trance channeling and everything in between.
Since you've been doing this, and you've been doing it for a number of years, have you come across some just bizarre situations?
very incredible stories definitely come across my emails, and you know, people telling me their stories after talks. We also have a unique database where we collect people's firsthand experiences. So what's fascinating is that many of them are actually quite common. However, the person thinks that they're incredibly bizarre. So they're writing in and they're saying, I don't know what's going on with me. I'm seeing lights and colors around people. I can't talk to anybody about this. You know, have you ever heard of such a thing? And they have no idea that so many other people can actually see colors or auras, et cetera, around them. So I don't know if that answers your question about something incredibly bizarre. I think what's bizarre is actually in the perceiver of the experience. And part of my goal in actually writing this book is to show people how incredibly common these experiences are, and they aren't that bizarre, that so many people are having them, and to help normalize these experiences in some way.
Doctor, is channeling like walk-ins? Is it the same kind of thing?
So I think what you're thinking about is trance.
Oh, I think we lost you. Are you there? Nope, we got to call her back, Tommy. We'll get her back on the line. She disappeared, and she is nowhere to be seen. So we will try to get her back. My gosh, that's horrible to lose a guest that quickly right into the first thing. Sometimes you wonder, when you're talking about these strange guests and things like that, what happens to them and where they go and what happens. So, Tommy, you get her back on and give me the word of what we can do. And we will keep rolling along, folks. And worst comes to worst, if we lose the guest for the first couple hours, we'll go to open lines. Okay, we got her back on here, and let's bring her up. Hello there. Well, you disappeared. Some spirit clipped your phone or something.
You wanted a bizarre experience, right? So, you know, a lot of people talk about technology and equipment just fritzing out when the energy is high. So we got a firsthand experience of that. So walk-ins are more related to mediumship, where, you know, people will meet in a group. They will have the intention of connecting to what they perceive to be deceased humans. And usually the people in the room have deceased humans that they want to connect with, right? So a walk-in is when a supposed deceased person comes in that nobody really knows. And so they call that a walk-in in mediumship work.
I keep thinking of Whoopi Goldberg in the movie Ghost, and
right.
she played the part of that paranormalist who had people
right.
walk into her. They jumped into her body and drove
yeah.
her crazy, but she was able to communicate a little bit. Channeling, of
yeah.
course. Can anybody channel?
So we at IONS hold the premise that anyone can channel, and yet the way that that channeling looks for them is different. So we believe channeling is an innate capacity that every person has, and yet the way that they channel is unique to them, what we call their noetic signature. So myself, for example, I feel things in my body, like I get goosebumps, or I might get a download of information mentally. Other people may actually hear things. Other people may see colors, like that example that I gave. And yet the way that their channeling shows up to them, up for them, is individual. Not that, you know, if I can move something with my mind, that, you know, my channeling is better than someone who gets, you know, gut hunches or something. They're all unique and different and incredibly diverse.
Well, let's talk about the title, The Science of Channeling. What does that mean?
So I had this personal background and, you know, had experienced it firsthand. And I had no idea that there was this whole body of research that was being done on channeling phenomenon. And so you know, that's parapsychology, and parapsychology has been around for about 150 years, evaluating these phenomena in a variety of different ways using scientific methods. So my goal was to be able to summarize, if you will, the research that's actually been done on channeling. You know, how common is it? What makes a channeler a channeler? You know, if you have channeling experiences, is that a mental health issue you need to be concerned about? What do we know about how it works? And what are the, about what the sources are and where the information is coming from? Things like that. So I put that all together in a kind of lay language way, so it's not, you know, the dense scientific paper, so that people can at least have a resource to start with to begin exploring more deeply the research that we actually already have about channeling.
Helena,
there's so much more to do, but it's a great start.
If you went out there and talked to 10 people about channeling, how many of them do you think would understand what channeling is?
I don't know if they would understand it, but 8 to 9 of them would tell me that they had some sort of experience of it.
Well, that's pretty high.
How common it is. It's incredibly high. We've done a number of surveys, and other people have as well, all over the world, looking at a variety of different channeling experiences like contact with the dead, clairvoyance, telepathy, precognition. And in countries like Iceland, Europe, Japan, China, USA, and the commonness of this ranges from as low as 10% to as high as 90% in some of the surveys. At IONS, we did a study with about 900 people. There were three groups, scientists and engineers, the general population, and who we call enthusiasts, which were actually people from our listserv. And in those three groups, it was above 90% of them saying that they had at least one of 25 different channeling phenomena.
That is amazing.
It blew us away. We couldn't believe how high it was. So we looked at the items again, and we said, maybe, you know, people perceive these as like some normal things, like empathy instead of clear empathy. And when we took those away, it was still higher than 87%.
Is there a common denominator with channelers?
One of the most common is meditation practice. And so people who meditate do better in the lab on channeling type tasks.
Okay.
And they also can learn various channelings like remote viewing or telepathy or trance channeling more easily. So that's one piece. There's also the personality trait of openness, which has been noted in people who channel. There's also a belief in it. So if you believe in these types of phenomenon, you're more likely to have channeling experiences. We also know that when people get into altered states of consciousness, you know, in whatever way, whether it's shamanic drumming or, you know, fasting or psychedelics, that they can access these states more easily as well.
Is channeling like being psychic?
That is a great question. So the way I'm defining channeling with this very broad umbrella term, it's essentially the same thing. So channeling equals psi or psychic. And we know that there's so many, you know, taboos and stigmas with that word, psi and psychic. And so perhaps channeling will allow people to be more open to learning more about it.
The name of the book that we're talking about is The Science of Channeling with Helena Wahbey. Her website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com, of course. And she's also on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter. You're all over the place, Helena.
Thank you.
We're going to come back in a moment and continue chatting about the science of channeling. We will take calls with her next hour. And if you've channeled or you know somebody who has, definitely make that call next hour. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you, along with Helena Wahbey, as we're talking about her book, The Science of Channeling. Helena, when someone channels, how do they get into this mode? Is it meditation primarily?
We just finished a survey that actually asked people just that, and we called that the ways of engagement. And people get into it intentionally, and it also happens spontaneously. If they do it intentionally, there are internal things that they do, like meditation or visualization, various intention setting rituals. Other people do it using external things like, you know, pendulums or tarot cards, or might use drumming. And yet, whatever path that they do, it gets them into this altered state where they are open, receptive, their ego mind, if you will, is a little bit more quiet. Meditators are able to get there pretty quickly because they have attention training and intention training to be able to quiet their mind, relax their body, and be more open to receive this information and energy that might be just beyond their traditional five senses.
When someone is channeling, who are they channeling for or what? A dearly departed one, a friend, who are they going after?
That's a great question. So it depends on the type of channeling. And, you know, the short answer is we can't really prove, if you will, where this channeled information comes from. But people have a lot of different ideas about the source. So many people who are channelers themselves believe that it comes from their higher self or collective consciousness. People who are mediums and trance channelers might say that it comes from actual deceased humans or multidimensional beings, angels, off-world allies, etc. We can't really prove that that's so, but that's their subjective experience, that that's where the information is coming from.
Now, how does it show up? Does it show up in the form of telepathy? Do they hear voices? What's the mechanism to pick this up?
Great question. So like I said, these channeling phenomenon really are on a spectrum. So you have things like precognition or knowing something that's going to happen in the future, or telepathy, being able to communicate mind to mind, or clairvoyance, being able to see things that are distant from you. Some people also call that remote viewing. And then there's, you know, things that mediums and trance channelers might do, like contact with the dead. So it really depends what type of specific channeling phenomenon we're talking about, because the way it shows up is so varied. And like I mentioned in my definition, some of it is receptive. So, you know, remote viewing might be this receptive experience where I'm tuning into a target that's halfway across the world and I'm describing what's going on with it, whereas psychokinesis or mind over matter is more expressive. You asked about a bizarre story. This was a really, really cool story, I thought. Someone got it in their mind that they wanted to use their intention, their mental intention, to stop their electrical meter because they didn't want to pay their electrical bill anymore. And so focused their intention to stop the meter. They did that at night. They woke up the next day and the meter was stopped. Had his kids go turn the air conditioner off and on, and the meter was completely stopped, stayed stopped for 2 months. Then he started feeling guilty that he wasn't paying his electrical bill and said, okay, I really need to get this working again, set the intention again that the meter was going to start again, and it did. So that's an example of expressive or what some people call psychokinesis.
Are there any no-nos about channeling, things that people should not do or avoid?
I think it's something that should be done intentfully if it's not happening spontaneously. So, for example, you know, precognition, telepathy, clairvoyance, that might happen for people in a day-to-day, just day-to-day life, right? But then if you look at things that happen around mediumship or trans-channeling, like using the Ouija board as a game or, not bringing kind of conscious, intentful awareness to connecting to supposed discarnate beings, there are definitely issues that have come up for people around that when they do it in a non-aware way. So I would recommend, if people want to explore mediumship or trans-channeling, to find a teacher to support them to do that, so that they can be guided for doing that in a way that will support them and keep them safe and protected.
What are the possibilities that something wrong could happen, something demonic can come through a channel or something like that? Can it backfire?
So I don't want to scare the audience in any way. Go ahead. It's so rare. It's very rare that this happens. And yet, you know, people talk about earthbound spirits, which are, you know, humans who have passed but have not moved on, if you will, and that they can get attached to humans, maybe not necessarily maliciously, but that just their connection to the material world draws them to people who are still living, and that that can affect the living person's mood, energy, even health. I have seen a few cases of non-consensual possession where, you know, the trans-channeler isn't consenting, but that a, you know, supposed discarnate being has actually taken over a person when they didn't want it to. But that's so, so exceptionally rare. And that, you know, most of the experiences and research that I've read is that, you know, that usually does not happen, and that people set a protective intention so that it doesn't happen. And for the most part, channelers who are mediums and do trans channeling have a positive working relationship with who they believe are their discarnate helpers.
How long do you think it takes, Elena, to get into the mode to channel? 5 minutes, 10 minutes, an hour? How long?
It really depends on the person. And, you know, some people take longer than others. People who have spontaneous channeling experiences, they have no preparation at all. It just shows up for them. There was one nurse who sent us in a story. She was doing her home visits with people, and she just heard this voice, "Don't go in there." There was no prep for her, and yet she got this very clear message and trusted it and didn't go, and then found out later that there was a crime that was happening in the lobby of that person's apartment building at that time.
It may have saved her life. Who knows, right?
Yeah, we have so many stories of people being saved from car accidents, you know, like the light turns green and they have this intense feeling to just wait, and they do.
It's happened to me. I tell the story. I'll tell you. We've told our audience this several times. I was going through an intersection, and I had the green light. And I had cars behind me, and I'm going through, and I'm ready to go through. And all of a sudden, I hear this voice in my head that says, "George, don't go through." And I've never heard that before, not like that. And I went, "What is this, George, don't go through? I've got cars behind me. I've got a green light." It said, "Don't go through." So I pulled over to the side of the road. At that point, a car went through its red light, and it would have broadsided me, doing about 60 miles an hour.
That's an incredible story. Isn't that amazing? And we get stories like that all the time, this spontaneous, protective type intuition that comes in and helps us.
But here's the question, Helena. What did that? Am I some kind of beacon for intuition? Or was it a guardian angel who told me? Or a dearly departed family member who told me? What did that?
Well, who do you think it was? Who or what?
Part of me wants to think that it's some kind of intuition that I have within my system. But the other part of me thinks that it was assisted. Something helped me. I don't know who or what, but some other force got involved and came in and saved me.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, we can't really prove either of those. And there's people who believe both and maybe it is both and. And so, you know, at IONS, we have this premise that everything is interconnected, that we are all one on some level. And so whether it's your higher self and your, you know, higher intuition, or whether it's a guardian angel, maybe it's all just one part of a big whole anyway. And so I know people get really excited about wanting to know exactly what the source is. But if that saved your life in that moment, to me, that's the most important piece. And perhaps, you know, 5, 10, 20 years when we're able to actually see multiple dimensions and have the tools to be able to do that, we'll be able to prove exactly where this information is coming from. And we'll continue to do work towards that at IONS. But in the meantime, I really invite people to focus on how it can actually support them in their lives, just like that, and being open to it without necessarily knowing exactly whether the source is their higher self or a guardian angel or something else.
Did you ever know the late astronaut Edgar Mitchell, who was the founder of IONS?
You know, I didn't get to meet him personally. I started at IONS.
You would have liked him. He was a good guy.
I know. He was not feeling well, and then he passed shortly thereafter. But I've heard stories and, of course, seen lots of video and audio footage of him.
He was deeply into this. He was deeply into visitations of extraterrestrials. He was an amazing person. And the fact that he was an Apollo 14 astronaut who walked on the moon and had this belief system was just fantastic to me.
And as an engineer, I mean, he had this completely transformative experience that just changed his worldview instantly.
Absolutely. You've talked about consciousness. What does that mean to you, consciousness?
So the way we like to talk about it is little C consciousness and big C consciousness. So if you talk to a neuroscientist, they're talking about little C consciousness, whether I'm awake, aware, you know, aware of my surroundings. And what we're talking about at IONS and the research that we do is big C consciousness, or this aspect of consciousness that is non-local, that goes beyond our conventional notions of time and space, and that many feel is the fundamental nature of reality. And quantum physics and cosmology are really providing more evidence that this might perhaps be true, that this big C consciousness is this underlying layer of everything, and that perhaps our consciousness, little c, and our own individual big C is one aspect of that.
Is it God-given consciousness?
Is consciousness God-given?
Yeah.
Then we get to launch into this whole conversation about what is God. Maybe God is this fundamental consciousness that is everything of the universe.
What do you think?
Personally, I think that that's true.
There's something divine out there. There's something special about all of this. I mean, this is not a fluke.
Yeah.
This is not a roll of the dice. This didn't all happen by chance. There's too much order to it, isn't there?
I'm incredibly amazed by so many synchronicities and my own life. And, you know, that's another reason why I feel this work is so important, because when people tune into that inner knowing, their noetic wisdom, their life just opens up in such an incredible synchronistic way. There's, you know, no more banging your head against the wall about choosing this or choosing that, and their lives become more easeful. It's incredible. And so I feel that when we are more aware and intentfully connecting to that big C consciousness, and if you want to call it God, okay, that our life becomes easier personally. We get along with people more easily. We find creative solutions for problems around us.
And it's fun, and it's fun, to be sure. Helena, we're going to come back in a moment and take calls with you. The Science of Channeling, your calls are next on Coast to Coast AM.